I mean, the first two race weekends, there was a bit more fireworks, but I think today was interesting. It was more like a classic F1 race, if I could say that.
Yeah, I mean, by that point, do you mean the tiny bit boring?
Yeah, a
there
little
was
bit.
suspense. There was suspense, I guess.
I mean, yeah, I thought the opening stint of the race was really looking good, like having the top three within 2.5 seconds of each other.
Yeah,
for a good amount of time.
Yeah, I think we always, not always, but I think quite often we need a second pit stop to kind of like add a bit of flair into there, because there's a bit of, when there's one pit stop, it just seems like there's a lot of management going on. And when there's in, you know, 50 or 60 lap race, you put two pit stops in there and you make three stints of 20 laps. It's just as a rough estimate. It just adds a bit more of a sprint to it, I think. Like Hamilton was clearly managing today when he got in the lead, and when Bottas was in the lead, he was clearly not quick enough, and that's why we had a bit of an interesting first in.
Let's just run through the race quickly, because it was well, let's go before the race. Bottas on pole, did he deserve it?
Well, I mean, he did at the two Mercs, he did a good lap. You quite often see with Bottas that I don't think his issue is overall, his main issue is quality. Compared to Hamilton, I mean, sometimes he's a bit off, but you know, a lot of the time you just push him, you know, in the same tenth. So I think he would be quite happy. I mean, I've seen his stat actually. He's got 17 poles in his career, and whilst he's had, you know, a good car, and Hamilton's obviously had a lot more. I mean, 17 poles in a career is not bad.
No,
I mean, the second best behind Hamilton's like 70, I think, which is Schumacher. You know, he's further the way towards Senna. So, you know, qualifying, whilst he's definitely not as quick as Hamilton, it's not a bad, but I think, yeah, Verstappen clearly, I don't want to say dropped the ball, but I mean, he had the quickest car, he did the fastest lap. That first lap he did in quali in Q3, where he's actually got deleted for even losing time going wide, but rules are rules. You know, I thought that time was going to be terrible until he crossed the line.
Where did he go wide?
He got a snap through turn four, over the crest in turn four.
Really, really just, tricky corner.
Yeah, it is. The rear goes, you can, especially in a, I don't want to say especially in a car, but having driven there myself and done the F1 sims there, you're in sort of like fourth gear going over the top there, and you're flat and you're putting a lot of lateral load. And combined throttle as well, so outside rear right, and doesn't take much, especially this weekend. It looked like it was pretty much always a tailwind. You don't have that to save you. And it was close, but I mean, you know, rules are rules. But yeah, it was still actually the fastest lap technically done in Q3 if it wasn't deleted, and he lost time. So it just goes to show that the car was quick enough for pole. I don't know what happened on his second one, but yeah, I think, you know, credit to Mercedes for jumping on that.
Yeah, exactly. But the start of the race was a good one. It was. I thought Verstappen was going to get it into turn one. Round the outside of Hamilton, he almost had it, but the two Mercs got into the lead.
Yeah, exactly. There wasn't much change. I want to say Sainz got ahead of. I can't remember who it was or lost the position. No. It was Norris ahead of Perez, wasn't it?
Yeah, Norris jumped Perez, and Sergio looked like he struggled to turn on those tyres at the beginning of the race. But so did the top three as well. And
I think Norris was the first of soft starters, I think, and he looked like he had that edge off the line. Clearly, it was Sergio starting on the other side, the dirty side. But yeah, that was pretty much one of the only changes in the top ten. Otherwise, it was quite stagnant until obviously. We got the safety car for Kimi's misjudgment. If you can have someone like Kimi making that mistake, it just goes to show that it's not easy.
Yeah, a bit of a weird one. I think because was it a headwind down the home straight today?
Yeah, exactly. Toe would have been strong. I wonder whether he was. I was speaking on the radio at the time, or was looking down at his dash. I know it sounds really stupid and rookie, but that's the only thing I could think of, because otherwise from the camera angle above his head, it just looked like he drove into the back of his teammate, which I'm sure he's not that, you know, he's not that silly.
No, but I think that I remember racing there in the past, the winds at Portimao are difficult to judge, and it can really change how well, we'd gear the bike for that home straight because the headwind down there, especially with the, because the grandstand on the left as you're going down is absolutely massive and it really funnels the wind.
Yeah.
So, no, just a bit of a misjudgment by Kimi. But then we had the safety car, and after the safety car, all hell broke loose, really.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think on the restart, Bottas actually tried to go in turn 14 in the second to last corner, got a snap and backed out of it. It kind of looked like, because we had the helicopter shot from the live feed, and he looked like he had a snap and realised that was him screwed if he carried on going and backed out of it. And then kind of forced, I mean, I could be completely wrong if that's how it looked, and then kind of got forced himself into, you know, going slow and or closer till the line, and it seemed to catch out Hamilton. Verstappen got him on the outside into turn one, and then we were stagnant for a few laps, and it looked like Max had the pace definitely, probably didn't have the top straight line top speed to sort of get ahead of Bottas, and Hamilton looked like he was struggling at that point trying to switch the front tires on, and at some point those mediums sort of came to him. Max made a mistake, exit turn 14, got a swap on. Obviously, I sort of don't blame him for that because, as you can clearly see for the rest of the race, he didn't have enough into turn one with in terms of engine two or straight line speed to get ahead. So he was having to fight so hard, especially in that last sector, those last two corners, and that one lap pushed it a bit too hard, got a snap, and it just sit and duck then with Lewis going into turn one.
You could see every lap that Max was closing in that middle sector. But then towards the end of the lap, as the last sector, you know, the Mercedes started to stretch and it was just comfy enough at the end of the straight always to hold that margin.
Yeah, I mean, I could be mistaken, but I don't remember really seeing Mercedes under pressure but from Max under DRS, you know, like normal conditions through mid-stint. You know, I don't think I saw that often, to be honest. I could be mistaken. I just completely forgot one. But yeah, I think Mercedes clearly had set their car quite well for the race conditions as well as qualifying.
And it stayed pretty, you know, once Hamilton had got back past Max and then, you know, and everyone had got into their running orders today of the top three, we then had the pit stops. Verstappen came into the pits in third place. Bottas was in second and Hamilton was in the lead and Red Bull pulled the gun first. And I think that was probably the defining moment of the race today.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of what I hinted at the beginning that, you know, when we have these tight races with these, you know, Max versus the Mercs, there's not a lot between them. And it takes a pit stop to sort of open it up and get, you know, those out and in laps and undercuts and overcuts going. And that's clearly what happened today. I mean, you saw, pretty much once Max had started that off, Lewis clearly had pace in hand once he'd got into the lead from taking Bottas into turn one. He sort of managed the gap, really. He was trying to keep them in a bit. It looked like he was trying to keep them out of DRS, but also in dirty air to sort of keep his tyres, but hurt their tyres.
Yeah.
And then once Max pitted, that was his licence to stretch it then. So he... You know, I'm jumping forward ahead a bit here, but he was never under pressure, you know, even having to pit two laps later for Max with the fact that Valtteri had to pit first for the undercut threat from Max. But yeah, I think when we all saw that the gap coming out of the pits, Valtteri looked like he was sort of, you know, he looked like he had enough gap. He didn't look like he was under enough pressure, but cold tyres clearly hurt him into turn three. He lost the car between turn three and four, put him on the back foot, down the back straight into five. But what I didn't get about that, and, you know, I might be a bit hypocritical here because I've been in that position myself, and maybe he was in his blind spot and didn't see him. But going on that straight between turn four and turn five, Max was not alongside him, but to his left, out of his toe. And Bottas didn't like come over to cover him, to defend him into turn five.
No, no, no.
He just sort of gave him the easy line. The only thing I'd hope that happened was he couldn't see him in his blind spot. Otherwise, if he did see him, I don't understand why he didn't at least try and make it difficult by making him go to the outside. I mean, yeah, he probably would have gone deep into five and Max would have got him on the cutback anyway. But, you know, you've got to try something. You can't just give him the inside line.
I think the only thing you could say maybe was what happened was as Verstappen's cut back at four, the closing speed in Bottas's mirror of of Verstappen in four to his rear end, he's maybe thought, oh, he's already alongside me.
Yeah, it's the only thing I could think of because, again, it always looks easy on the onboard cameras when you sat above the head. You know, you don't see how little they see in the mirrors. But, you know, the slide in turn freeze, you even saw Hamilton have a little moment there, not as bad, but when he exited the pit. So it was clearly just a cold tyre thing. But, yeah, that little failure to move over to the left seemed a bit strange, but maybe there was a genuine reason for it.
But I think the pit stop team of last year, Red Bull, really helped that move as well. You know, they put another cracking stop on for Max, and the Mercedes boys were a bit slower. So I think the pit stops really played a big part of it. And, you know, from what we've seen in the past as well, Verstappen really struggling to get past that Mercedes and DRS zones. But then...
Yeah, that was... I mean, Max is one hell of a driver and clearly got so much pace about it. But that was clearly his Brady's only chance today in that pit stop phase to get ahead. And he made the most of it, you know, when that opportunity presented itself. Yeah, I think it was Bottas's stop where they were about 1 second slower than the Red Bull guys, I think, if I remember correctly. And that was all enough in the end, because if you think if he had an extra second going down into turn five, he would have been fine because he's getting ahead into, you know, middle sector then, and the last two corners, he's going to have some tyre time to make a gap. And that's fine margins for you. That goes to show how important the pit stops are in F1.
100%. And then the top three really stayed as they were. Valtteri was closing in, got Toto on the radio again, giving him a bit of encouragement. But he was closing a bit more, and then it was an exhaust temperature sensor which failed for him, and he lost a bit of power and lost a load of time. But that was really the top three today. But big shout out to the driver of the day from the fans was Sergio Perez today.
Yeah, I think he did a good job. You know, he's a bit, don't want to say unfortunate, it's just racing, being the first guy to be vulnerable to the first soft tyre starting in form of Lando Norris. And that first stint really hurt him. I mean, it wasn't his whole first stint in the end, I don't think, but, you know, he was already 10 seconds behind by the time he got back into fourth, and he kind of held that gap. You know, his pace was quite, if he would have been there with off the back of Max, he wouldn't have been too far behind him, I don't think.
No.
Probably like 4 or 5 seconds tops as he got closer in dirty air. But he obviously they tried something by extending his stint, basically. I think they thought maybe they could slow up Hamilton as Max was now in P2. Which they normally play that game, you know, when there's an opportunity to. I mean, he had 4th place in the bag, so what, you know, may as well, really.
Yeah.
But no, I think he's, as Martin Brundle put it in commentary, you know, he's just, I can't remember how he described him, but he could take anything, engine brakes, tyres, you know, so much longer than everyone else, it seems.
Yeah.
He seems so kind on them. And his driving style is something we always hear about him, but, you know, I know it wasn't the biggest deck track this weekend, so maybe he was forced into it a little bit more with the race situation, but he clearly has that knack.
That first stint of Sergio's, which lasted till lap 50 of 66. So
yeah.
I think that's pretty good going. But something we've spoke about, Jake, was the tyre compounds this weekend. Maybe a bit too hard?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we in many ways, us as a sort of... fans watching, we're kind of a bit hypocritical in a way, because we say we want them to be able to push flat out all the time. But you know, when we get races like this, and really only tyre warm-up was the issue, and the drivers can drive flat out, they just can't overtake each other. The way the cars are nowadays, with the how aero dependent they are, how fast they are, they need the pit stop phase to shake it up a bit. Get people on different tyre compounds, different situations. You know, when you had that first stint of just all the top four mediums on tyre that wasn't going to degrade, and it's just, you know, it was a case of who blinked first, really. Yeah. You know, all you're kind of looking out for is a safety car. I think it's easy to say now, but bringing the C1, 2 and 3, I think it was probably a bit, one step too soft, at least at C2 and C3. They didn't look like there was a lot between them. We saw Hamilton even trying to do his fastest lap in Q3 on the medium. And it didn't look that different for the Mercedes in the soft and the medium. So yeah, I think we would have, if it one step more, we would have had a bit of a more of an interesting race, maybe had a second pit stop potentially. But yeah, I think also something to mention as well is the fact that they shortened the DRS zone by like 120 meters or something like that. I don't know if that's actually correct in my hand, but something like that. And again, we're maybe hypocritical of complaining about DRS, you know, as not the way forward for the sport, and it definitely isn't. But you clearly see when the DRS zone is maybe, I know we had overtakes in DRS, but when you have guys that are so close on pace, that shortening that today was probably, I want to say 20 or 30 meters too short. But you know, that's maybe for a different argument or a different conversation to talk about. Next year's cars probably wouldn't have that situation.
Yeah, but as you said, Hamilton tries to do his fastest lap in Q3 on the medium, but he really showed his class today, and I think, you know, put Valtteri in his place yet again.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, isn't he? He's just got, he gets the bit between his teeth. You can just tell. I mean, it's, I suppose in many it's carried with him for his whole career, even when at the beginning. But once you've won so much, and you know, in terms of personal goals, I can only imagine he's got the 8th world title in his mind now. He's won everything, done everything else nearly. And it'd be quite easy, you know, to, I imagine anyway, to sort of lose a bit of focus or a bit of desire anyway. And he's just the opposite, it seems. He's just every single year, every single race, you know, stint, slap, he's just on it. He just wants to be the fastest. He loves the fight. He loves, I mean, he clearly doesn't, I really don't think he's lying when he says that he wants Red Bull to push him or Max to push him this year. I mean, he wants that. He wants to prove to people that he's the best. And he gets in that situation today where he finds himself in P3 after that safety car restart, pounces on Max, gets on his teammate into turn one and just mugs him, basically. I mean, I don't know if you what when you see from the head on, because the live feed was head on into turn one when that happened.
Yeah.
And as he turned in, I was like, that's a crash. That is a crash. As he turned in, knowing how tight that corner is to the apex.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
when you sort of see the onboards and the overheads, it's like Valtteri basically gave it him.
Well, that's what having an edge over your teammate is, or having the edge over anyone, isn't it? Because if you know you're going to keep the throttle in and just turn in, and you know the other person's going to move for you,
that was definitely in Lewis's head. I'm sure of it. And more in Valtteri's head is probably, you know, I don't want to crash into Lewis because it's basically kicking myself, especially after the whole Imola debacle with Russell, which is basically kicking me out of a seat if I do that. It's funny how these things come in, and it's just, but talking about Lewis, he's so impressive. I mean, I saw they read out a stat, I think, on the Sky commentary that since 2013, he's only failed to score for the team in 9 races. Which is crazy. I mean, how many? I think it's been 9 seasons since that point, something like that.
Yeah.
8 seasons or whatever. We're in our 9th season now. So you're talking like, what, 170, 180 races?
And a couple of those would have been in 2016 versus Nico when he had a couple of engine failures and stuff.
Yeah. You know, this is including DNFs, I think, like just mechanical failure DNFs.
It's ridiculous, so isn't it?
I wonder whether he's actually finished, how many times out of those 9 he actually finished the race and failed to score.
Yeah.
1, 2.
If that.
It's nuts. I mean, he'll go down as one of the best, if not the best that's ever lived. And you can only applaud him for it.
I think it's 97 race wins for him now. So, or something stupid.
He's going to be in the century in both poles and wins.
Yeah.
He's going to probably... Well, I can't. I was about to say he's going to probably have his 8th world title, but that would have been a bit brave.
I think you're jumping the gun there.
Yeah,
I think Verstappen's got something to say about it this year. But let's rattle off. We're trying to keep to our timer this week, people. Like last week, it went out the water horrifically. And we've not got Nick here this week. He's been in the Nordschleife in VLN?
NLS it's called now.
NLS.
NLS. It sounds like that music band that existed once upon a time.
what with Timberlake and stuff?
No, JLS.
Oh, Why did I go to like in sync or something? Oh, for God's sake.
But yeah, he unfortunately left his iPad at the track, so he's unable to join us. What a Billy.
What a Muppet. He had a good weekend, though.
Well, I said, did he? I'm supposed to be his name. Top BMW, I think, yesterday in race one, I think.
Yeah, I'm just, I
didn't notice that his race.
I'm just scrolling through the group chat just to see where he finished again. Because we really pay attention to our friend racing.
We just think he's that good that we don't need to.
P5 he took, top BMW.
Yeah.
He fought back from P14 to P5. And must have almost crashed 6 times a lap every lap. So good on him.
That's probably why he's forgot his iPad, because he's still dizzy.
Yeah, probably. And the Nordschleife is, God, I'd forget everything after lap of the Nordschleife.
Yeah.
But let's go to our talking points before we round off the F1 stuff. Alpine, good show.
Yeah, I mean, I think I even heard one of the either Norris or one of the Ferrari drivers mentioning in their post qualifying chats that, you know, the surprising performance of Alpine. But really, when you think about how they were finishing towards the end of last year with Ricciardo getting those podiums, I think in Germany and Imola, you know, I think it was more surprising that they weren't there in the first two races.
Yeah, I think they didn't carry on the upward trajectory, did they?
No, and you have a few cases of that this year. It seems like with the rate change or the floor change, which obviously it's the buzzword this year is rate, but obviously Aston Martin seemed like the standout. But, you know, Alpine until this weekend were also in that bracket. They looked like they'd completely fell out of that fight for best of the rest. I still wouldn't say confidently they're as quick as the McLarens, especially Norris and the Ferraris. Mm. But they seem to have bought themselves in this weekend with the sort of AlphaTauri's mix. That sort of fifth fastest, maybe squeezing fourth fastest on occasion.
I tell you what, Fernando in that final stint looked absolutely back to like the Fernando we sort of know.
He looked like the old Fernando, didn't he? Where he was just on a charge.
Who did he swoop around the outside of at turn one?
Ricciardo.
Yeah, it was Ricciardo. And I thought,
You've seen that before.
Seen that before.
In many ways, when he was announced he was coming back, I kind of felt a bit like, you know, give the young guys a chance. And in one extent, I still definitely do think that. But if he's gonna come back, I want to see him fight. You know, if he's gonna bother with this with Alpine, I want to see him up front.
Yeah, and he finished less than a second behind Ocon. Yeah, just 1.1 seconds behind Ocon.
And he had a really strong first part of the race, I think. So he looked strong, and it was tell the two halves really. I can't remember their tyre choice, but maybe their split strategy, and that's kind of how it looked. It's kind of how it looked to me without knowing that if they had different strategies or not.
Yeah, exactly. But great, great showing by the Alpines. Let's move on to McLaren quickly. Norris was the best of the rest again. I think that's all he could have wished for this weekend.
That's all he needs to do, really. You know, in a normal season, he's not going to finish ahead of the likes of Perez or Bottas. His best this year is can hope for. He's fifth in the Drivers' Championship, and I think that's what he should be aiming for, clearly. He's finished, I think, fifth since Abu Dhabi, fifth, fourth, third, fifth. You know, he's on a roll. He's clearly performing at his best. I heard him talk about it. He's saying he's trying to spend less time streaming, more time concentrating on F1 and sort of spending a bit of time with Lando. I know he's very happy, obviously. He's so like happy-go-lucky jokester.
Yeah.
But underneath the helmet and behind the visor, he's a very serious guy. But he seems to have found that right mix that so far this year. I think Ricciardo's spurring him on, or at least the reputation of Ricciardo spurring him on, because his actual performance isn't where it should be right now and needs to be right now. But yeah, I think McLaren have a good car. Mercedes engine's clearly strong, and they seem, you know, whilst Alpine were strong this weekend, it was, you know, they weren't there in the first two races, and it's going to be more about having a consistent package, which it seems like McLaren and Ferrari even now do seem to have.
P16 in qualifying for Ricciardo, a big fight back today to P9 or P10? P9 he got just ahead of Gasly. I think that will spur him on, to be honest. I think to get back inside, well inside the points, after what was a absolutely disastrous qualifying, I think that's going to give him a little bit more confidence, maybe.
Yeah, I think if he hadn't scored points after yesterday, he would have gone home, you know, a bit feeling sorry for himself. So
yeah,
you know, I don't think a driver like him needs a pick me up like that, and he's definitely targeting more than P9, especially when he sees his teammate always in the top five at the moment. But no, that P16 was strange. I mean, it's funny because between Q1 and Q2, they actually showed his lap on board. Kuran Chandak was commenting over there. I was thinking the same thing that he was. It didn't even look that bad. I mean, it didn't look like it was on the ragged edge, but it didn't look like, you know, he should be slower than you know, George in the Williams, for example. It didn't look that bad. So it was a bit of a strange one. Maybe something happened that I hadn't heard about. But yeah, behind the scenes, he's definitely still missing, you know, a few tenths compared to Norris.
Missing something. And the final thing we'll touch on before your driver of the day, Jake, is Aston Martin. Speaking of struggling.
Struggle Street, yeah. I mean, it was really good to see Vettel get into Q3.
I was really pleased about that. And he beat Lance today as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's good. For me, it's really good to see that they're, this weekend they've performed on a level. So it's not like just, you know, Vettel's back there and you're going, oh, but look at Lance, he's well ahead. Or vice versa. I think that is the potential of the car at the minute.
Yeah.
And it is struggling.
It's clearly, you know, sort of eighth fastest, really. You've got Alpine and AlphaTauri in that sort of, you know, fifth, sixth brackets. You know, you're talking best Aston Martin, seventh fastest. Sort of finishing where he did in 13th is kind of what you'd expect. Maybe you should be ahead of the Alfa Romeo.
Yeah.
But, you know, Stroll is pretty much in the same place anyway. So, I think it will give him some confidence getting to Q3, which will be beneficial for the team, having him, you know, a bit more sort of confident around the place. But yeah, they had an upgrade package, I think, on Stroll's car this week, which they seemed to be very pleased about, but it didn't seem to help him in qualifying anyway. In the race, Stroll looked a bit more competitive, at least compared to Vettel. So maybe next race, Vettel gets that new package as well. And you never know what might happen, but they need to improve. At the same time, you know, first year of Aston Martin, the big rule change next year. Clearly, they're not going to be able to change the rules to suit them this year. So I do anticipate them calling time, at least on development of this year's car, very early. And moving, you know, resources or their new sort of founded resource with the money now into the 2022 car, probably.
Yeah, and we mentioned Giovinazzi there quickly. I think he's driving at a good level at the minute, so I wasn't too surprised to see him beat Vettel and Stroll.
At least in my eyes, he's the most forgotten man on the Formula One grid.
Yeah.
I honestly, and this is not an insult to him, I just don't know he's there. He's not doing anything bad. He's not doing anything wrong, like controversial. He's not saying anything bad. He's not crashing. But he's equally not in a car that can deliver points all the time. So he's just, you know, if Kimi wasn't Kimi, we'd forget about him as well. It seems like they're just in that's their place right now in that car. But him himself, I think he's doing a good job for sure.
You know, quite a solid race ahead of Tsunoda, just behind Sainz. So
he has a good chance of keeping that seat, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And to round off the Formula One, Jake, driver of the day.
I think I'll go Hamilton. I know it's the obvious one. I know it's the obvious one, but you go back down to P3, you get back ahead, go around outside your teammate, you make it look easy. It's just, it is so underrated, that drive, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and Bottas is a quality driver, but you see what he makes him look like sometimes. Yeah.
I'm going to go for Fernando.
I'm not sure I can say driver of the day, but yeah, good drive.
Well, I like to go a bit more interesting, and I'm also going to go for a big shout out for Mick Schumacher for beating Latifi.
Yeah, that was a good little fight I saw at the end. Forced Latifi into mistake turn three. Yeah, he looks like he's getting on top of that.
Good stuff from Mick. Right to the two wheel side of things, and this weekend the MotoGP boys were at Jerez. Oh, Jerez! What a beautiful track that is.
I really like Jerez.
I know, but you do it with a weird chicane where it gets really fun.
Yeah, I do wish we did that. Those that
flat out right.
Yeah,
incredible.
Yeah, that last, it's a bit like Barcelona. That last chicane, it's horrendous.
I mean, yeah, the bikes are not doing the last chicane at Barcelona either now. So
yeah.
Come on, you boys need to get on it.
Man up.
Yeah. Let's talk about qualifying in GP quickly before we get onto the race results. And we'll also touch on Moto 2 and Moto 3 very quickly as well. Fabio Quartararo, you know, another pole position.
He appears to be the
Saturday man.
Yeah, he's on it at the moment, isn't he? He looks very at home. Obviously, it's not really that different to his last year or two in MotoGP or his first year or two in MotoGP with the Petronas bike. But no, I mean, like we touched on, I think in our first racing show episode, it's not easy going into the big team, so to speak. You know, there's more pressure.
Mm.
In theory, it shouldn't be any different. And if you have the right mindset, it should encourage you. You know, it should motivate you. Yeah. But you know, in some guys, you see in F1, even in some guys, it just doesn't work. So there's always that risk, I guess, depending on what type of person you are. But he seems to be relishing it.
Yeah, no, it was another great pole position. And then second place, Franco Morbidelli on the 2019 bike. And people, we must stress this to you, is the 2019 bike, because Franco has said it in every interview this weekend, you could imagine. So on the 2019 bike, I think it must be a horrible, horrible position Franco's in, because I was talking to my dad about this earlier. You know, we said, okay, you've finished second in the world championship, the top Yamaha. You've won the same amount of races as the lead Yamaha last year, which was Quartararo, also winning three. But you've beat him in the championship. So you've done everything in your power to be top Yamaha, you know, most race wins.
Yeah.
And you get put on a worse bike than your teammate and the factory boys. And your teammate's been upgraded to the factory.
If anything, it's more impressive mentally. More than its actual, you know, results. Results, it comes into the mental side of it, I guess. But you know, it's so easy to, in that position, to see that drive of the he's a Movistar Yamaha, the sponsor now.
As a factory squad.
Mm. Yeah, it'd be so easy to be, I think you've been overlooked for that. Not only that, you're not even been given the same equipment.
You've also got Fabio saying, the 2021 chassis gives me so much more feel and I can be more aggressive with it and I cannot ride on the limit all the time. So,
I mean, that part of it is hard. Only he knows whether he's being truthful with that. You know,
exactly.
A lot of that could be politically to his benefit. Mm. You know, it could even be a very clever move to say that. But just the things we do know, you know, to say that you're being overlooked for that, for your teammate that you did beat in the end in the championship, and not even being in the same bike, just in a different livery.
Mm.
It's been very easy to be, you know, start to get a bit disjointed or, you know, just to lose focus, to think, should I go somewhere else, instead of actually doing what got you there in the first place and will get you to the top in the future, which is focusing on doing the best job you can.
Yeah.
It's very easy to lose sight of that. And he's doing it. And I think he will get a lot of respect for it. If it doesn't work out at Yamaha, I'm sure he's going to get a go somewhere else.
I Aprilia must be absolutely kicking the door down for him. Suzuki, I think he'd go very well on. I'm not sure he'd go great on something like a KTM or a Honda, really. You know, he's got such a smooth style.
The only one I can see at the moment confidently is the Suzuki. I don't know why they would change from Rinzamir. I don't think the team would choose to do that, but if one of those riders decided to leave, like Maverick did those years ago, I'm pretty sure he'd be the first on the list for that kind of team.
Maybe we'd see something like the old Repsol Honda used to have a three bike team.
Was that when Dovizioso was there as well?
Dovizioso, Pedrosa, and Stoner.
I remember that. I think that's when I started watching bike racing.
Yep. So you know, never know. Maybe see something like that. But let's look at the race today and Viva Miller. Do you follow Viva Miller on Instagram?
No, you always tell me to, and I always forget. I need to follow that.
Get on the Viva Miller page. But yeah, Viva Miller won today. Jet Miller, absolutely astounding ride from him. But the big talking points there was Fabio Quartararo, who got, I think it's about half race distance, three quarters race distance, and dropped like a stone. And everyone was thinking, oh, is it the tire? You know, what's going on with this? And it turns out it's come out this evening and this afternoon, was it was arm pump. Bit of a weird one.
Because I mean, only you can tell me how hard that is.
I mean, normally you can feel it sort of setting on a bit. And it's like, this is getting bad. Yeah. This is interesting now. But he said he literally grabbed the brake at one point and just absolutely nothing there. So
I think that's got to be so disconcerting on a bike.
Yeah, it's horrible. It just feels like you've got no power.
Yeah.
It's horrible. It's really difficult. So he's a bit unsure what's caused it. And he's going to, he'll probably go down the surgery route now.
It's a bit worrying, isn't it? It's a bit, you know, just when he's getting on top of it, doing a good job. You know, he looks strong, and it's just what you don't need.
I mean, his pace was super fast at the start of the race as well. So I think he's going to get on it. But speaking of people who have had arm pump operations, 3 weeks ago, Jack Miller had an arm pump operation, and it's clear it's worked for him because, you know, that was, he reeled Fabio in. At the start, he reeled him in and then overtook him, and then Fabio dropped like a stone. So, yeah, easily Jack's best ride of his career today. And then
I don't remember Ducatis going that well around to it.
No, they don't.
So how are they 1-2? What's gone on there?
I think they've got two guys who hustle. I think they've got two guys who just absolutely batter a bike around a circuit. I think, you know, it's kind of like the old Casey Stoner was the same. He'd absolutely muscle anything around any circuit. And Jack's very much that all action. And then you look at Pecco, Francesco Bagnaia, really getting off the bike, turning of his body through Crivier and the fast rights at the end of the laps. Francesco was using third gear for the first one, short shifting to fourth for the second one. And I think it's that slightly different way of riding the Ducati to the way like Dovizioso and Petrucci was riding it. I think it's just helping them. So that's the reason for the 1-2. And then in P3 was my rider of the day, Franco Morbidelli, who was, you know, elated with that, because he said, I was on the limit every corner of every lap. And he said it felt like a win. On the 29th.
I bet it does. I mean, again, it's very, I don't want to sound like I'm being very obtuse towards him here, but it's so easy to, you know, if I was in his position, I would be bigging that ride up as much as I could. I'd be telling everyone how good I was and how hard that was for me to do, and therefore how great I am for doing it. And that sounds like what he's doing. But the ride itself is impressive still. Although Quartararo dropped back and technically on the Yamaha, he's still miles ahead of Rossi the same bike. He's not on the same bike, is he?
I'm not sure how factory Rossi's is. I think it's pretty damn factory though.
Yeah, I imagine he's got more bits than Franco.
17th place today, behind his half brother Luca Marini by 2 seconds.
It's disappointing to see, isn't it? It's a bit like watching Lewis just be like, you know, in a good car or something, just at the back. It's just not nice to see.
My opinion is, I think, you know, you need to go.
Last year.
It's got to be his last year, but you've got to go out on sort of like a high note, though. And this is just, you know, 22 seconds off the win, which it's a good amount, but it's not a country mile. But I think the thing that highlights it the most as well is the person behind him was Tito Rabat, who was filling in for the injured Jorge Martin. Tito, who hasn't rode a MotoGP bike all year, he was only 8 seconds off him.
I mean, he's fourth last of the finishers.
And, you know, Rins, who was last, crashed. as well. Yeah. So
it's third last, really.
Yeah, I think really sad to see for Valentino. Hopefully he can rekindle. You know, let's not forget.
He qualified fourth in, yeah.
I was going to say that. Yeah, exactly. So there's some speed there. He needs to find what's exactly going on and see.
I think we just like to see him get on a podium or two, yeah. You know, this year. Just say, you know what, that'll do.
Yeah, 100%. That's it. Let's just rattle off a few finishers quickly who have had a good day, and then we'll wrap up this racing show, which has gone over our timer again, Jake. We need to stop
No, we have to, because otherwise we'd talk for 2 hours. Yeah, it's literally so easy to talk about it. There's so many talking points.
I know, but that was the problem last week with Nick. Yeah, it's just way too much to talk about, and then you've got everybody. Oh God. Anyway, top Honda, Taka Nakagami in fourth place.
I can't decide whether it's him or Aleix is my rider of the day.
Top Suzuki.
I want to say Aleix.
Yeah, top Suzuki fifth, Aleix sixth. I think that's the closest he's finished to the win.
5 seconds.
On that Aprilia as well. So that was a damn good show. Maverick, disappointing, seventh.
Yeah.
You know, and his teammates leading the whole race. But again, it was another little poor qualifying from Maverick. He's either on pole or P9.
Yeah, exactly. He'll just turn up next race and win by 5 seconds. It's just him.
That's the thing. And then the two Repsol Hondas in ninth and tenth. Marquez in ninth. After the weekend he had, and I know you haven't seen the crashes, Jake, go check them out. I think MotoGP have posted them up. He had a horrible one into seven. Come out the hairpin into the fast left. He had a horrible one there, reaching the air fence, and then turn four, where he crashed last year. He took the front there again in warm-up and reached the air fence. So he had two very fast crashes. I think P9 is a conservative ride from him, and I think a very good one. And I think it's what he needs.
Teammate.
Yeah. And just to build on the fitness.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it doesn't look like there's any danger of him losing his bottle or his pace, is that? It's just a case of being fit enough to last it, really, and hold on to it. So it's easier said than done, but he just needs to focus on finishing.
Yeah, 100%. And then Pol Espargaró looked quick yesterday, looked really quick. And as soon as he started looking quick, he crashed. And that seems to be a bit of a rhythm he's getting into with that. So let's just, I really like Pol.
He's on a new bike, remember.
All action, and I think he's going to come good eventually.
Honda, it's a bit like the second Red Bull seat. Honda, at some point, they have to commit to somebody in that second ride, and just say, you know, Marquez is a bit of a freak, a bit like Verstappen. If you're going to win a championship, you're going to need somebody else with him.
I think King Lorenzo was a bit of a mistake on that front, putting him in there. I don't think that was ever really going to work. You know, Jorge's style is so smooth, and it's just the complete opposite of the Honda. I call him King Lorenzo because he's the king of Twitter now. Love to get him on here one day. That'd be brilliant. I'm just going to run through Moto2 and Moto3 quickly for everybody. Fabio Di Giantonio on the Gresini Moto2 machine won today, and I think that is, you know, really great to see for that team. Because Fausto Gresini, the owner and the director of Gresini Racing, who also ran the Aprilia team, unfortunately died of COVID earlier this year. So I think that's a really great result to see for the family. And for Fabio himself, that's his first win in Moto2. Jake Dixon, the Brit, was ruled out due to a concussion this morning. So unfortunately, he didn't participate. But Sam Lowes finished in third, which was... Sam was really over the moon with it, properly over the moon, because he, you know, after the crash at Portimao, I think it took the sail out of his wind, and he was finding it the first couple of rounds. He found it quite good to get into rhythm and get the poles, get the wins. But then Portimao found it a bit more difficult. And at Jerez, he said yesterday he was on the limit in qualifying, and he had a little crash which showed it.
I saw that.
That was just, yeah, that's just, I saw that. That is the limit.
He was a bit, he had the pole lap sewn up at the last corner, and then someone managed to semi-crash.
Yeah, yeah.
So goes and crashes two corners later.
I know, so that was impressive. But yeah, really solid third place today for Sam. And then Moto3, very quickly, the rookie sensation, Pedro Acosta, has won again. He's the first ever rookie to score four Grand Prix podiums in a row. And that's his third win in a row.
Is he an alien?
He is. He's going to, you know, definitely big name for the future. And I think he will win the championship this year. And then the polar opposite behind him, the most experienced man. Do you remember a couple of years ago, he grabbed somebody's front brake on the...
really?
On the straight in Misano.
Yeah,
Romano Fenati in second. And then Jeremy Alcoba in third, who did two penalty loop laps things. You know, the long lap in GP now. He did two of those for penalties and still finished third.
Good effort.
You'd be over the moon with that, wouldn't you? But the last corner was chaos. Typical Moto 3. Who lunged? I want to say if it was like one of the KTMs just lunged and wiped about three people out. So that was interesting.
Love Moto 3.
Typical last corner Jerez. But we'll wrap it up there, Jake. That's another prolonged...
Oh, we've done all right. We've done all right there.
Oh, I think it's a good effort.
I think it can't be over half now, just about.
Yeah, but we'll have another one these next week because it's the Barcelona Grand Prix next weekend. I don't know if there's any bikes on. It's how well prepared we are here. Is there any bikes on? I'm not sure. I don't think there is.
I couldn't tell you. Actually, one sec. I'll tell you. Next one is French Grand Prix. Yeah, French Grand Prix in 2 weeks.
So we're going to have an F1 racing show next week. So we can... And we'll have Nick.
Oh, we could talk about Formula E even.
Is that next weekend?
Monaco.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so you're spending next week in Monaco then?
I am indeed.
You know what? They say it's a hard life for racing drivers, isn't it, Jake? And for you.
It actually is.
Well, you don't even race a car anymore, do you, really?
Oh, well, no. I know. At some point.
I need to get back on a bike as well. But I tell you what, we're all working towards it. So, it's all good.
Yeah,
it's all good. But thanks for tuning in, guys. I will say this quickly. We've had a great week on the HYM podcast here. We had, if you haven't checked it out already, go listen to the episode with Marcus Armstrong. Incredible reception to that. And we just want to thank you all for that because it was, we've put episode 10, that was, and it hit a really wide audience of people, and the comments and the support of it was fantastic. So we're going to definitely be trying to bring in more F2 content to the channel. We've got a couple lined up.
Yeah. I mean, by the time everyone listens to this, because there will be everyone, you know, everyone in the
everyone
world listens to this episode tomorrow. Yeah. By the time everyone does on Monday, it will be 2 days away, and you'll have to only have to wait a few hours, probably 12 hours, to see the announcement of who that is.
You know,
out on Wednesday.
You know, on our next podcast that's coming out on Wednesday, I won't mention who it is yet, but you know, you mentioned that other driver on it who we've already recorded with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't say his name again because we've had to bleep his name out.
Yeah.
Because we
To be honest, I lose track. We did. I mean, to be fair, we filmed him a little bit.
We filmed him a while ago, but we've had to bleep his name out.
Yeah. I lose track of when that was. So.
I know, but
yeah, want to be chuffed a bit when it comes out.
Oh yeah, that'd be a good one. But thanks guys for the support this week on the channel. It's been really, really good. So we're gonna keep bringing you this content, and there's way more to come in the future. So
don't worry, just getting started
for sure. But anyway, that's been the racing show for this week, guys. We'll catch you next weekend, same time. See you later.
Nice one. Cheers, guys.